AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a question that honestly feels like it belongs in a sci-fi novel, but it's actually being solved in labs around the world right now.
It really is.
We're talking about 3D printing human organs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see those incredible headlines, you know, a printed heart, a printed kidney, it just begs the question, are we already living in that future, or is this still like 20 years away?
It's a great question because the technology is breathtaking, but there's a big gap between the excitement and the reality.
And that's what we want to figure out.
Yeah.
How much of this is tangible success and how much is still, well, incredible hope, battling massive scientific hurdles.
Exactly.
All right, so let's unpack this. Our whole mission today is to find the realistic answer here.
Right.
We're
going to
do a deep dive into the source material,
yeah,
the science, the, you know, the real world applications, and maybe most importantly, the massive hurdles that are still in the way.
The bottlenecks, exactly. The things standing up between us and, well, a world without organ waitlists. And that realistic answer is just so crucial. I mean, the field is moving so fast, but you need to know where the successes are actually landing.
So what's the short answer? Give it to us up front.
The short answer is we are remarkably close. I mean, in some cases, we're already there for printing small functional tissue units.
Okay, what does that mean? Like, what's a tissue unit?
Things like skin patches, small bits of cartilage, simple vascular grafts, and these things called organoids that are used for research. Many of these are in clinical trials or even in use right now.
But if we zoom out to the big picture, the whole functional, transplant-ready, solid organ, a whole heart.
That's the decades-long journey. That's where things get really, really complicated.
Oh, not next year.
Definitely not next year.
Yeah.
Printing a large, fully vascularized organ for, you know, routine clinical use is still years, maybe even decades away. And that whole timeline depends entirely on major breakthroughs we haven't quite had yet.
That distinction you just made, the micro tissue versus the macro organ, that feels like the entire ball game here.
It is, because when people say 3D printed organs, they could be talking about completely different things. Our sources actually define three distinct categories, and I think breaking them down provides a ton of clarity.
Okay, let's do it.
So first, you have what are called bioprinted tissues. These are tiny, micro to millimeter scale.
So not for implantation.
Right, not at all. They're primarily used as these little living models for drug testing, for modeling diseases, that kind of academic research. Think of like a liver organoid. It's a tiny cluster of liver cells you can use to test if a new drug is toxic.
So they're incredibly valuable tools for science, saving time and money, but they aren't solving the transplant crisis.
Precisely. Now, the second category is where it gets really applicable now. That's large tissue patches or simple implantables.
Okay.
This is your advanced skin grafts, cartilage replacements, bone scaffolds, even segments of simple tubular organs like a piece of a trachea.
And these work so well because they're structurally simpler, or they just don't need that dense, complex network of blood vessels that a solid organ does. Is that right?
That's it, exactly. The blood supply they need is minimal, or the tissue is thin enough that it can just get what it needs from the patient's body until it fully integrates.
In category three, the holy grail.
The holy grail. Complex, solid organs, your whole hearts, livers, kidneys, the ones with the full architecture, all the ducts, and that incredibly dense microvasculature we need. This is by far the hardest category, and it's almost entirely preclinical right now.
That's a great map. Okay, so before we talk about what they're building, we need a quick primer on how. The source has really highlighted three key ingredients: the hardware, the materials, and the cells.
Yeah, let's start with the materials, what researchers call the bioinks.
Bioinks.
Right. And this isn't like printer ink or plastic. These are specialized hydrogels, things like collagen or something called gelmet or alginate. And these inks have two really important jobs.
Which are?
One, they have to carry and protect the living cells during the printing process. And two, they provide the structural matrix, the scaffolding, until the cells can build their own.
You mentioned gelmet. Gelatin methacrylate oil. That sounds pretty technical.
Yeah.
What makes that one so special for building these complex shapes?
Gelmet is crucial because it's a photoreactive gel.
Meaning it reacts to light.
Exactly. You can print a structure with it, then you just shine a specific wavelength of light on it, and it instantly hardens, locking that structure in place.
I see.
That ability to cure it on demand is vital when you're trying to build, say, the tiny overhanging branches of a blood vessel network without it all just collapsing into a puddle.
That makes perfect sense. It's like curing resin in real time. So how does the hardware, the printer itself, handle this thick, cell-filled ink?
Well, because the bioinks are often so viscous, the most common method is called extrusion printing. It's basically a very, very precise syringe pump that just pushes the material through a nozzle layer by layer. It's reliable, but it can be slow.
Are there faster ways?
There are. For higher speed or much finer detail, some groups use inkjet printing, which works like your home printer, or this advanced stereolithography, which, as we just said, uses light to cure those photoreactive bioinks really, really fast to get incredible detail.
And finally, the last ingredient,
The
cells, the living building blocks. The sources mention things like primary human cells, but a lot of focus is on induced pluripotent stem cells. Or iPSCs.
iPSCs are absolutely key. They are the game changer because you can coax them into becoming any cell type you need, a heart cell, a liver cell, you name it.
And critically, researchers are all focused on what they call autologous constructs.
Yes.
Which means the construct comes from the patient's own body.
That's the goal. If you build an organ using cells derived from the patient who's going to receive it, the risk of immune rejection just plummets. You could potentially get rid of the need for lifelong immunosuppressant drugs.
Which is a huge deal, a massive advantage over traditional transplant.
A total game changer.
Okay, that gives us the foundation. Let's move to the good news. What have we actually achieved? What can we feel optimistic about right now?
Oh, the clinical wins are really substantial, especially in that second category we talked about, the patches and simple implantables.
Right.
Groups all over the world have successfully made clinical grade grafts for skin repair, for cartilage, for bone implants. The regulatory pathway is clearer there too. The FDA has pathways for 3D printed devices, things that are just structural, and that's already a thriving sector.
But the really exciting stuff is when we go from those passive scaffolds to actual living tissue. What's the best example of a successful living implant we've seen recently?
I think the best illustrations come from the tubular structures. We've seen reports of 3D printed tracheal segments, windpipes being used clinically, actually implanted in patients in the last couple of years.
Wow, that's a major step. That's a complex living tissue that has to integrate with the body. Did the sources say how long those segments lasted? I mean, integration time is everything.
Integration is the key challenge, you're right, but the feasibility has been proven. These tracheal segments show we can print living, load-bearing tissue that can actually remodel itself inside the body. Now, a trachea is a lot simpler than a heart, but it proves the principle for these simpler organs.
And in the research space.
Oh, in the research space, microtissues and organoids are just flying. We're seeing bioprinted cardiac patches, liver microtissues, and these pancreatic islet-like constructs that all show really strong results in the lab.
I think I saw a presentation on that pancreatic work that's aimed at type 1 diabetes, isn't it?
Correct. We've seen really promising results on bioprinted insulin-producing constructs, basically clusters of islet cells that showed robust function, at least in the short term, in animal models. The fact that this specific tissue is moving so close to human trials, it really shows that the science is accelerating.
Okay, so this is where it gets really interesting for me. If we can print a segment of a windpipe, why can't we just scale it up and print a whole heart? What is the one single biggest scientific barrier?
That is the defining question of the field. And the answer is singular. It's one word, vascularization.
Getting blood to it.
Getting blood to every single cell. The moment you move past a really thin tissue, you hit what scientists call the diffusion limit.
Oh.
If any part of your printed tissue is more than, say, 100 to 200 microns thick, That's the width of a couple of human hairs' oxygen, and nutrients can't get to the cells in the middle just by soaking in.
They starve.
They starve and they die very quickly. So if you print a cube of tissue that's even just a few millimeters thick without blood flow, the inside just turns to mush.
So a kidney or a heart, which is massive in comparison, it's impossible.
It's impossible without a dense hierarchical vascular network, a whole plumbing system. You need arteries branching into smaller arterioles, which branch into tiny, tiny capillaries that feed every single cell.
But wait, can't you just sort of infuse the whole thing with nutrients in the lab and then hope it connects to the patient's blood supply after you implant it?
That can help for a very short time, but it's not a real solution for an organ with billions of cells. You need pressure. You need dynamic flow, actual perfusion, and only a complex interconnected vascular system can give you that. The challenge isn't just printing tubes, it's printing that whole complex architecture and making sure it robustly connects to the patient's own blood supply once it's in.
That is the central unsolved problem.
Mm.
But, you know, while it's a huge challenge, the sources show massive progress just recently. What are the concrete breakthroughs that are happening, say, right now, to tackle this vascularization problem?
Yeah, the momentum there has been incredible, and it's focused on something called sacrificial bioinks.
Sacrificial bioinks, that sounds very futuristic.
It is ingenious. Groups at places like Stanford and Harvard have reported these platforms where they design and print these incredibly complex branching vascular trees.
So how does the sacrificial part work?
Okay, so they use a special bioink, often one that dissolves really easily, like in warm water, to print the structure of the blood vessels first.
I see, the negative space.
Exactly. Then they fill in everything around it with the actual functional bioink, the one with the cells. Once that's all stable, they just flush out the sacrificial ink. And what you're left with is a perfect, complex network of empty channels ready to become a plumbing system.
And these aren't just straight tubes.
Not at all. They're designed with computers to mimic the body's natural branching structures. This is absolutely critical if we're ever going to get to large perfusible organs.
That level of engineering is just astonishing. So we've talked science. Let's switch to logistics. Let's say the science works tomorrow. What else is in the way? It can't just be a science problem at that point.
Oh, it's absolutely not. The non-scientific hurdles are immense, starting with regulation. A bioprinted organ is a really strange beast for regulatory agencies like the FDA. It's part medical device because of the structure,
right,
part biologic because of the living cells, and sometimes it's even part drug if you integrate growth factors.
So you can't just use the rule book for a knee replacement or for a new pill.
Yep. You can't. A mature regulatory framework for living functional tissues is still being developed. And this raises all these immediate complex questions, like, how do you prove long-term safety? An organ has to work for decades. How do you prove the cells, especially if you're using iPSCs, won't become cancerous years down the line?
That's a terrifying thought.
It is, and it requires completely different testing protocols. The agencies have to balance the desperate need for organs with the ethical need to have decades of safety data.
And then there's just the cost and complexity of making these things.
That's the next massive barrier, scalability and reproducibility. Manufacturing organs reliably at a clinical scale under what's called good manufacturing practice, or GMP, it's just fantastically hard and expensive.
Every single one has to be perfect.
Every single one. And it costs tens of thousands of dollars just to make a research-grade batch of bioink. Scaling that up for clinical use is an enormous economic challenge. And on top of all that, you need the long-term function. Even if it prints perfectly and integrates, the tissue has to remodel and function for years inside a patient. And that kind of long-term data, it just doesn't exist yet.
Okay, let's synthesize this for us. Based on what the sources say, what's the realistic timeline we should have in our heads?
All right. In the near term, so the next 1 to 5 years, we will definitely see wider clinical use of those advanced patches, more organoids for drug testing, and small implantables like skin grafts. And we'll probably see a few more human case reports for simple things like the trachea.
Okay, that feels very real. What about the medium term?
Medium term, let's say 5 to 15 years, it becomes plausible to see highly vascularized transplantable tissue patches, like a full-on functional cardiac patch to repair heart attack damage. Maybe even the first regulated limited clinical trials for a larger, simple, non-vital organ.
But widespread whole organs are still unlikely in that window.
Very unlikely. And those whole printed hearts and livers, that's the long term. We're talking 15 plus years. And that's if we solve vascularization, master host integration, and figure out how to scale up manufacturing affordably. It could happen, but only after decades more work.
So if that long-term goal is 15-plus years out, what are researchers hyper-focused on right now to try and bridge that gap?
Well, a lot of the focus is on maximizing cell survival and integration. We already talked about the advanced computational design for vascular trees. That's a huge one.
Right.
A second huge area is improving the biome itself, specifically with something called decellularized ECM-based bioinks.
ECM, decellularized extracellular matrix.
Oh.
That sounds like they're recycling old tissue.
That's basically what it is. You take a piece of existing tissue, say from a pig, you strip out all the native cells, and you use what's left. The matrix, the structure, all the natural biochemical cues as the basis for your new bioink.
And the idea is that this natural environment helps the new cells feel more at home.
It dramatically improves their survival, their function, and their ability to integrate into the host's body. It's a very promising direction. And finally, researchers are really invested in hybrid approaches.
Meaning they're mixing and matching techniques.
Exactly. They might print a scaffold, but then put it in a bioreactor to grow a vascular network on it before it ever goes near a patient, kind of giving it a head start.
It sounds like they're hedging their bets, combining the best of the old and new.
It's the smart play.
Okay, so to bring it all back to you listening,
yeah,
the bottom line here seems to be that we are incredibly close for things like research tools, organoids, and small implantable tissues. That work is happening, it's successful, and it's moving into clinics.
It is.
But reliably making a real clinical whole organ transplant, like a heart or a kidney,
yeah,
that still requires solving that massive vascularization challenge and navigating these enormous regulatory and manufacturing hurdles.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Absolutely. The convergence of research is so promising, but it's a marathon.
And that tension between the regulations and the patient need is where I think the final provocative thought really lies.
Go on.
Given how complex it is to regulate these living, functioning organs, which are a device, a biologic, and a drug all in one, how will future regulatory bodies successfully balance that? How do you balance the desperate immediate need for organs against the absolute scientific necessity of having decades of long-term safety data? The pressure to approve these things will be immense, but the risk, if something goes wrong, is just unprecedented.